Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up Monday on our show, with the controversy over self-dealing at the highest level of city government, in quasi-state agencies, and in the State House, a conversation about political leadership and what is needed to change the trajectory of a city that has been battered by scandal after scandal in government, law enforcement, and the nonprofit sector. Catalina Byrd is a political consultant and activist. Davon Love is a community organizer with Leaders for a Beautiful Struggle. And Sean Yost is the Baltimore editor of the Afro newspaper. They're going to join me to talk about the scandal embroiling Baltimore Mayor Catherine Pugh and others. That's coming up Monday on Midday. Luciano Pavarotti bringing down the house with music of Giacomo Puccini. If you've just joined us today, it's Midday on Music. We talked about some of the financial challenges the BSO is experiencing in the first part of the program. As expensive as it is to assemble and rehearse a world-class symphony orchestra, it's even more expensive to stage a grand opera. Not only do you need an orchestra, you need a cast of principal singers, a chorus, costumes, a set, a lighting designer, a director, a bunch of stagehands, and even more to create that magical world where people sing on stage as naturally as the rest of us speak in real life. Those are just some of the reasons that it's been hard in recent years for Grand Opera to succeed in Baltimore. After nearly 7 decades, the Baltimore Opera Company went out of business in 2009. Its successor, the Lyric Opera of Baltimore, shuttered its doors in 2017. And now, one of the area's most accomplished operatic artists is hoping that three times is the charm. James Harp is the founder and artistic director of the Maryland Opera Company. He joins me here in Studio A, along with the local opera soprano, Colleen Daly, to talk about the inaugural season of the Maryland Opera Company. It's good to see you both. Welcome.
Good to be here, Tom. Thanks so much.
So, Jimmy, you and I both work for the Baltimore Opera Company. I was the chorus master until 1994. You took over in 1994 and then rose to run the company. We know, you and I both know intimately the challenges that opera has faced. There have been various smaller opera companies that have come and go in the ensuing years. Why do you think this year or this time around with the Maryland Opera Company you can make a go of it when it's been so hard in the past?
It's a very good point. Part of it is channeling of resources. What we're doing now is that we're now Maryland Opera Company, which means that we want to serve the entire state of Maryland or places where they're not currently served. The Eastern Shore, you know, Western Maryland as well. There are, of course, wonderful other opera companies, Annapolis. But we want to concentrate on those places which don't really have a presence. Certainly here in Baltimore, which will always be our home. But there are people who want all sorts of forms of opera. There's, of course, the Grand Opera, which you spoke about, the most expensive of all, but also smaller events which can soothe the operatic taste and which are really profound, good, wonderful chunks of opera experiences.
And Colleen Daly is a singer. I mean, obviously, you know, have voice will travel. I mean, anybody hires you, you'll go sing wherever you want to sing and for the right fee. But how important is it to you as a person who lives in this area that the company, that there is a company, an established opera presence in the largest city in our state, Baltimore?
It's hugely important to me. You know, I've worked all over the country, and I've worked in Canada and a little bit in Europe. But most of my bread and butter has been local work, and part of that has been just how the cookie has crumbled. But also, it's been by choice. You know, I feel like I have it all because I have 2 kids and a husband. We live in Howard County, and I've worked extensively for, you know, three iterations of the Baltimore Grand Opera Company in various forms, and with Annapolis and with Baltimore Concert Opera, who I know you're talking to next. They're all amazing companies. And for me, that experience has shown me that Baltimore truly is an opera town, because I've met nothing but, you know, grateful fans.
So, Jim, the mission statement, or the mission as you have articulated it, is really broad. That's interesting to me. I mean, you talk about quality opera performances, innovative artistry, support for social awareness, education outreach, underserved communities, a commitment to them, a vehicle for talented singers. That's a lot. I mean, how do you accomplish all of that?
Really, it's very simple. Because you do have the spectrum from grand opera. You have the smaller events, which don't take as much money. We have a huge education outreach program. We have opera camp for underprivileged, underserved kids. We have education programs, which we take all around the entire state. We also want to establish a new opera series of newly written works, which address incredible social issues that are very persuasive. So you can do the grand opera, you can do the medium, you can do the smaller, you can do incredible outreach. The most important thing is that we keep opera alive in our community. We have Miss Daly here. If you've ever heard her sing, she's magnificent. And she is part of the reason that we do this. We train people at Peabody, Towson, Morgan, University of Maryland, all these places around here. We are creating incredible artists. They must have a forum. And it must be here in our community. That's why, you know, I've been at this for a long time. And at one time, I actually thought about becoming a monk. It would make life so much easier. But no, I want to do this for our younger generation.
And Colleen Daly, I know you've done a lot of educational programs. I've done a million of them. I've played more Kaffa Jimma auditoriums in elementary schools across this great land of ours than I
believe it's
count.
Called a cafetorium.
Yeah, cafetorium now. Part of the problem is, I remember on any number of times we would go into the Baltimore Choral Arts Society and they would start singing, and the kids' first reaction was to laugh because they thought it was a parody. Because when someone is singing like this, it's different, you know, than the music they're used to listening to. And they just thought we were goofing. They thought we were like Saturday Night Live, you know. So winning people, whether they're kids or even adults, who aren't hip to what classical music is in general or opera is in particular, is difficult. How do you, as a performer, how do you get over that hump?
You know, I try to meet people where they're at. I have two small children of my own who are obviously well-versed in classical music. And if we put a classical music recording on of any famous artist, my four-year-old asks if it's mommy singing or if it's daddy singing, you know, and that's super gratifying, usually because the people that we're listening to are much better than I am. But, but you
nice
know,
to be counted in the same sentence,
exactly.
Isn't it?
Yeah. But, you know, I also have family members who are, for lack of a better word, jocks, you know, and I had some family members come to do an opera that I did at University of Maryland, and they said, well, why didn't you tell us there was a bar? We would have come sooner. You know, they came and they started coming to operas, and they would tailgate in the parking lot beforehand, and they'd hit the bar at intermission. They had a great time. So, you know, you mentioned the kids laughing and thinking that they're goofing. You know, sometimes it is really funny, and sometimes it's a shock value, but sometimes it's just pure joy, and they don't know how to express it any other way except to laugh. So I think education is key, and that's why, you know, the opera camp is huge. I have private voice students that have done the camp and are continuing to do the camp, and they love it. And I think one of the biggest things about it is that it's free, which makes it accessible to people who think that it's an elitist art form, because it's not.
And Jim Harp, speaking of the bar, your venue is a very important thing too. You're not playing this job on Sunday afternoon at the Lyric. You're playing it at the Pendry Hotel in downtown Baltimore, right next to the bar. So that's important too. I mean, and you're also not doing an opera. It's not one piece. You know, it's going to be excerpts from various operas by the great Puccini.
Right. These are opera-themed events that we want to do. And again, this Pendry Hotel, it is fabulous. Colleen, we went there the day. The acoustic is great. We have a chamber orchestra. So it's really, it's opera light and yet not opera light. It's not a full evening, which is kind of terrifies a lot of people. But it's chunks of opera. It's not just an aria recital. Staged and costumed. I mean, Mimi will come in with her candlestick.
She's in La Boheme.
Absolutely. Musetta will hear with her accoutrement, her bow and everything. So it'll be really, for those who love it, they'll really love it. And for those who are new to it, they're going to think, wow, I can get into this.
Because Colleen Daly, one of the things about the demise of both the Lyric Opera and the Baltimore Opera before it, people pointed to some mismanagement and some, you know, lack of oversight by the board of directors, certainly with the Baltimore Opera Company. But other people pointed to just a lack of interest, that there just aren't enough people who fundamentally like it. So it's not just a matter of big donors giving money on a regular basis, but people just deciding, you know, I feel like going to the opera. Is it possible that that grand opera on the scale that we used to do at the Baltimore Opera Company is simply something that is an artifact, artifice from the past? And it's just, you know, we used to have a Pony Express. We don't have that anymore. It's been supplanted by other things. But we hear that, we hear this gloom and doom. I hate to be Debbie Downer, but what do you think about that particular narrative?
How much time do we have? You know, I think that there is a certain part of, you know, we have to do, we have to approach it differently. Audiences are different, for sure. I don't think the art form needs to change, but certainly the way in which it serves the community and the way in which we bring people into it. I think a huge part of this is education in the schools, for sure. You know, it needs to be supported from a very young age. And, you know, and we, there's all kinds of effects that are shown that, you know, that positive effects that music education has on people. But, you know, I think that bringing school-age children to the opera is huge. I think, you know, my husband works in the schools and in the music, and he started an opera night in his school. And those kids bought tickets to come see Lyric Opera of Baltimore because they loved it. So, you know, it's, I think it's an, it's an exposing that needs to happen, and education that needs to happen, and more people need to understand that that it's fun. I mean, this thing about the Pendry is that there's such a sense of event around it. Right. I mean, just being in the space and seeing, you know, hearing about how the alcohol is going to flow and seeing what the space is like. I mean, it's, if I wasn't performing in it, I would 100% be there, because it's just going to be so fun.
But Jim, I mean, you know, you've been in this business a long time, 30 plus years. Mm-hmm. You know by name the people in this town who really love opera.
Right.
And there just weren't enough of them to keep the Baltimore Opera Company going. Is there a chance that that group, whom you know so intimately and who have such great respect for all the terrific work you've done over the decades, you know, can in fact expand?
Well, actually, we're doing that. Our board is expanding. We're doing very well. Tom, I think the issue is that the venues are so big. I mean, even the Met has trouble filling all of those seats in New York City. The Lyric's a big theater, and we're actually going to be, if we do grand opera, it probably would not be at the Lyric, but at a place like Krauschar, Shriver Hall, beautifully renovated, places like that that are more like 1,200 seats. That way you don't have to worry about so many empty seats. It was like the last two productions we did at the Lyric, Romeo and Juliet and Barber, they were first-class productions, but they were not well attended. And people go and they see empty seats, and it's not a good sign. So maybe a smaller venue, but with complete devotion to it.
But that's also what opera was intended for. You know, it's a European art form that was meant to be performed in houses that were 1,200.
Much more intimate.
And they're getting European help from their government. You know, the European government is supporting it.
Well, you can catch the Maryland Opera Company's presentation of Puccini at the Pendry at the Sagamore Pendry Hotel in Fells Point Sunday afternoon, 3 o'clock. We've got a link to the details at WIPR.org/midday. James Harp is the company's artistic director. Colleen Daly is one of several acclaimed singers who will be singing on the program. Break a leg, both of you. Enjoy yourself.
And, not you.
Thanks so much.
You can go to the bar after the show.
Oh, you're
not before. Puccini at the Pendry isn't the only operatic game in town this weekend. Coming up, an opera composer with more than a casual interest in the law joins me to talk about his opera based on the special relationship between two Supreme Court justices. Derek Wang will tell us about Scalia Ginsburg, the latest project of the Baltimore Concert Opera, after a quick break. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
This is 88.1 WYPR.